Hello, this is Janet Gallen with Love Letters Live and a wonderful complicated guest and subject matter for today. I want to introduce Dr. Mary Lou Naccarato. She's a board-certified clinic sexologist and certified sexuality educator from the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. She is also a life coach. She's a media sexologist. Now, that means that you talk to people on public forums like this?
Yes.
Okay. And in private practice, she works with individuals and couples. She conducts explicit entertaining sex and relationship workshops for all people who desire to heighten their sensuality, and intimacy. And this is cute. She says, if you think size matters, then Dr. Mary Lou is the one to check out today. She speaks from the point of view as a little person standing 3 feet 11 inches tall. She's America's little sexologist talking about sex and life strategies in a big way. Sex positive message. And with that, I want to go to you. And thank you for coming here.
You've
already talked about so much just before we went on, but will you start with how you came to this profession?
Sure. First of all, I want to thank you so much for having me here. It's such a pleasure to talk with a variety of different hosts, so it's wonderful meeting you. I actually started this career by accident, as most things can happen.
A lot, you know how that is. Me too, by the way. Go ahead.
That's awesome. So in 2004, I happened to be watching a program on a cable network show, and it was talking about Kama Sutra positions, and I'm sure you're familiar with what that is. And the narrator just happened to discuss, well, if you have lower back problems, you can do this particular sex position standing up, where the man is standing and his or her partner is laying down on the edge of the bed. And I thought to myself, I wonder, you know, what do people do if they have other problems besides just lower back problems? The show wasn't about lower back problems, you know. So because I'm a little person and we have a variety of disabilities in our community, I went to the best source to find out more, and that was my girlfriend.
Oh, of course. It always is, yes.
Yeah, so I asked them, you know, how do you do it? What do you do? And I found out that even though a lot of people had sexual desires and such, it was a subject that no one wanted to talk about.
Oh, I was going to ask, did they welcome your question?
Well, from the people that I knew, yes.
Because they were girlfriends.
Yeah, because right. They were people I knew. Even so, it was a little bit embarrassing, so I had to, like, gain their trust and ask them, you know, what exactly is going on between the sheets, you know. And there were lots of issues that had to do with accommodating range of motion issues, not being able to achieve the desire that they wanted. And so it led me to decide to do a workshop at a little people conference, a national conference, and surprisingly in San Francisco, which is a very liberal area. So I was really happy to do that. And as I started to put together my information for this workshop, it just kept growing and growing. And I realized there wasn't good information out there, and I started typing away all this information that I thought would be helpful. I had an illustrator draw some drawings for me, and I put on this workshop, and it was a huge success. And from there, the creative process of that pulled me in a direction, and it just kept growing. And
I'm guessing it was a success beyond the sex.
It was a success because it just gave people permission to accept that it's okay to do it differently and we can talk about it because we don't talk about it the way we should. And there's a lot of fear and embarrassment around it. I will say that at the time, my career was very different than working in the sexuality field. So I was an IRS agent.
Oh, that's right. I read that about you. Yes.
So it was kind of interesting. And later, many years later, people asked me, how did you go from doing taxes to, you know, working with sex?
Well, and you're going after one kind of secret or the other.
That's true, too. And I say, well, you know, it's like I've gone from spreadsheet to spreading the sheet.
Thank you.
But I have to say now, I'm doing this full-time now, and I love what I do. And my goal is to break the gap between limitations and fulfilling your desires. And I feel like I'm that person in the middle trying to make it work for whoever comes to me for help.
Let me ask you about, I'm just interested in, because I know you said you did this at a Little People's Conference, but what about people who don't have that particular issue to think? I mean, are you out there for the public in general, or is there enough done for the public in general that you want to stay specialized?
Well, that's an excellent question. So I actually started with Little People because I identify with that, and that's who I am. And so I moved on now from that. I went into addressing all kinds of disability issues. And then from there, it's anyone who has a medical condition, because not everyone identifies as having a disability.
Like what kind of medical conditions?
It could be, you know, you could have maybe a joint implant surgery.
Oh.
You could have related issues from medication or chronic illness. You could have perhaps maybe an injury or an accident, and you're impaired in some way. So limitation can be affected.
Oh, so some
anyone.
People, by any limitation, can think that they're left out of the world of sex.
This is true. And that's one of the first things to go out the window. And then other things start to happen, and then it manifests into negative aspects.
Talk about what else happens when between a couple sex goes.
Well, oftentimes, if one is not comfortable with their own sexuality and they expect their partner to figure it out, that presents problems. You need to be able to first figure out what it is that your desires are, figure out what you can and cannot do.
Physically,
mm-hmm. emotionally.
Uh-huh.
Address your own feelings about sexual attraction. A lot of people are in denial on what's pleasurable or what's attractive. And if you don't address these issues, then you're going to take out your anger and frustration in mm-hmm. other aspects, which is the reason why my work is so good, because I deal with the life coaching and the life strategy of that. So if someone comes to me and says, oh, I have this issue with intimacy, or I don't, you know, I haven't had an orgasm or whatnot, can you please teach me how to have a better sex life? It's also very interesting to see that once you're able to address those issues, there may be other things going on in their life that have nothing to do with that. So I address the whole life aspect, the spectrum of what it is that's going on in your life, so that you can fulfill yourself as a person, not just in that segment.
Right. I'm guessing that when people come to you for any of these issues regarding their sexuality, when people come to you, they're halfway there. No?
Well, it's just
unless they are forced by a mate?
It just depends. For example, if I have someone who has a disability that requires a lot of caregiving mm-hmm. also, and mm-hmm. I've had people who are who live with cerebral palsy mm-hmm. and they have caregiving issues. They're not living independently, for example, and they haven't had positive life sexual experiences. I might match them up with a surrogate. I might work with them on how they can figure out a way to masturbate themselves, or maybe have a caregiver help with certain needs. Once these things are dealt with, then this person is also looking for a partner in life, and those are the secondary issues.
Oh, so I made an assumption here that I shouldn't have.
What is that?
That people come to you as couples.
I do all. I work with
individuals. But I realize, obviously, individuals come. Yes, of course. How did I miss that? Okay.
The thing with many people, especially with people with disabilities, they haven't had positive masturbation experiences. And so they need help with that. How do I? They don't know what exactly is an orgasm if they haven't been able to do it themselves. Maybe they can't reach, or they're not able to control
uh-huh,
their hands.
Uh-huh.
For many little people, they can't reach
uh-huh.
down there. So you're growing up with not having been able to reach your own genitals.
Such a thing occurred to me, sure.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes. So by the time they're up in their adult years, there's a lot of frustration around that.
Sure.
So what I try to do is say, okay, I do an assessment. I've created a medical mobility assessment to figure out what exactly all their limitations are. And then I can pinpoint exactly how we can address these things. Many professionals don't know how to do that. They're afraid to ask the question that I ask.
Yes.
And
that's lovely how uninhibited you are, that nothing fears you at all.
I'm excited because, to me, it's achieving a goal. You
sure.
know, we have to go through the swamp, so to speak. But I'd like to share one story that
Please.
I have. Yeah. So in one instance, I was working with a little person who also happened to be blind. And her arms were very short.
Mm-hmm.
And she was not able to reach her genitals. She was a college student age. And she came to me and she said, you know, I can't reach. And, you know, I want to have a relationship, but I can't even reach my genitals. And it's very hard for me. But she's been in and out of different relationships. I asked her, have you ever had an orgasm? And she said, I don't know. I think so. And I'm like, you know, if you had an orgasm, you would really know. Trust me. And she's like, yeah, okay. So I said, let's talk about your lady parts. And what I do in many of my seminars, because I train and educate groups as well as professionals mm-hmm. on how to teach people.
Because we have you've got a little velvet model.
Yes, yes.
Cute.
What I do, though, is that basically I teach the language of sex.
Mm-hmm.
People need to be taught how to communicate what to ask for
mm-hmm.
and to communicate what it is that they don't have and how to get there. So this velvet, this is a vulva.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people think it's a vagina, but it's not. It's a vulva puppet, and I know that listeners can't see this, so you might want to
look
it on the
article. Why I do need a television moment.
So what I did with this particular individual who is blind is I took out the vulva puppet and I actually took her hand.
Of course.
Let me take your hand. And I took her hand and put it in front of her and I said, we are going to go through these parts. And so, you know, this is the vulva, this is the outer lip, the inner lip, which is the labia majora minora.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to feel the hood of the clitoris,
uh-huh.
and then underneath it here is the clit. So I'm doing this
yes.
with your hand, like I
yes.
did with her, and we're sitting next to each other doing this. And then I bring out a vibrator. This is one of them, but there's many sizes that is long enough so that she can touch uh-huh. the vibrator, hold the vibrator, and then I had her hold the vibrator, put it on the puppet.
Mm-hmm.
So that she can feel what it's like on the puppet and where to stimulate herself on this, and then transfer that so that she can do it herself in privacy
uh-huh.
with the vibrator at home. What is so cool about this experience is that as I was showing this to her and going through the steps,
mm-hmm.
she was like so excited. She's like, oh my God,
oh.
wow. No one has ever done that with me. This is so cool. And she goes, I get it. I get it. And it was so exciting to be part of that process with her that, you know, I was overwhelmed.
I can see where you would
with
be.
With emotion. And,
yeah.
And to me, it's just so exciting to be able to connect the dots, so to speak. And she was very, very happy.
Also to bring people into a new awareness.
Yes. Yeah, it's a reinforcement of what my purpose is.
And permission.
Permission,
which,
absolutely.
Yes. Oh.
Permission to ask, to figure it out, and to get the help you need, and then move on from there.
Now, people know to call you and get in touch with you. I mean, you're obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, but I'm guessing that you're rather well-known here now.
Well, my website is amazing. I'm contacted by various organizations and professionals around the world, as well as individuals. And I work with so many different groups of people, and it's just wonderful to be able to help in
that
way.
I must say, as even just for me and for people who have not been aware of this particular issue with people who are, you know, I'm not comfortable ever with the word disabled. It kind of sticks in my throat.
Yeah, yep.
But, you know, who have different capacities and different needs and different, that so many of us who don't have those particular limitations are unaware of so much.
Well, you bring up a good issue about disability because I thought you might like to know that the World Health Organization, defines disability in three parts. And if you'd like, I can briefly.
I would
talk
love you
about
to,
that.
Because I think this is a real issue, seeing people as differences as being disabilities.
Yes.
I kind of don't ever get that. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Even I cringe at the word and right now, that's the word we're using, so it kind of...
For me, I just like first names, but go ahead.
Okay, so the definition of disability under the World Health Organization is an umbrella term covering an impairment, which is a medical condition, an activity limitation, which is being able to execute a task, like sex, for example, or driving a car, and a participation restriction. And that would be something that where you're involved in different life or social situation. So it's not just a health issue. We're dealing with social and environmental issues.
Yes.
And it's a complex phenomenon of the relationship with those things. That's why they say disability is a social construct. Because it's involved in how we relate with our in society. What I have a big problem is that people, when you hear the word disabled, and I looked this up in the dictionary, and there's just so many negative connotations.
That's what
just,
it gets.
Just to the word itself. And
on top of which, it applies to everybody in some regard or other.
Yes, yes, yes. But, I mean, can you imagine, like, if you look this up, disability is associated with words like disqualification, incompetent, incapability, impotent, lack of inherent talent or power.
Yeah.
These are very, you know, negative.
It's words. Lunacy.
It's crazy.
Yes.
But we have to, what I try to do is think of it as we are all part of this together. It's not us versus them. We are all disabled in some way.
For sure.
And I'd like to ask, I engage in people saying, how do we embrace our own unique body types? Are we all disabled in some way? Do we have a limitation in some way? Can you ask yourself this? What can you share about yourself? How do we define ourselves in the language and the words we use? And this is all part of that self-acceptance and being viewed by society in a positive way.
But that's
way.
A much larger issue, and the basic one anyway is the self-acceptance.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So when I'm with a client or a couple or such, what I try to do is say, okay, I'm here to change your perception. Let's start with that first, because there's always a way. We'll figure out the details later, but I want you to first know that there is a way. It may not look like what you think it's going to be.
What do they think it's going to be?
Well, they could have unrealistic expectations. You know, they look at porn and they think it's supposed to look like that, and it doesn't. Where the body has to look a certain way, you have to perform a certain way, you have to have orgasms a certain way. All of these things are nonsense. And what I try to do is say, this is what it looks like. It's what you can do and what you're able to realistically achieve for yourself. And it's the emotional connection, the spiritual connection with yourself as with your partner, if you have your partner. Whether or not you have a partner is not always the end game, too.
You know, I'm smiling because I love being in the company with somebody who has a good sense of nonsense.
Yes. Yeah. I just like, you know, let's get the cobwebs out and let's just deal with it, what you can do, and we'll make it work.
May I? Were you going to, are you going to mention something else before I have a question?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So there's this really cool diagram that people can look at online. It's called, it's pronounced metrosexual, which is a gender-bred person cartoon, which I'm showing to you here.
Now, people can go to your website and see all this, right?
Well, this particular item is not on my website. I think I need to update it and put it on there.
Uh-huh,
but basically, it explains the non-binary gender and sexuality issues that is very fluid. We're not in a black or white box. And it's broken down into parts. And I'd like to go over a few of these parts because it relates to how we deal with our sexuality, especially if you have a medical limitation or disability. So when we say identity, it's basically how we feel in our mind, how we identify. When we say attraction or romance, it's who we are attracted to, and it's fluid between maleness and femaleness. When we say sex, it's our biological sex, what we were born with. And when we say expression, it's how we express ourselves outwardly. So oftentimes there's a conflict between identity, how we feel inside, with the way we express ourselves. And the dilemma that we have with disability and people with medical condition is that people will have attraction, they have desires, they have orgasm, they have all these feelings, but we're not able to express it in a healthy, positive way. Either because there's a fear of society accepting, or they were raised with an asexual upbringing because of medical issues throughout their life. And many doctors don't even deal with it now if you should acquire a medical problem later in life. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of shunning with that. So all these feelings that you have inside, you're not able to express it in a healthy way. So that's where I try to break that conflict as well.
Complicated and important. Yes.
It can be, yes. But I think it's exciting because we live in a world now where there's so much more acceptance. And I feel that people are generally good. People's intentions are
good. I agree
good.
With that, yes.
And I know there's a lot of issues as far as acceptance when it comes to disability and medical issues. But, 30 years ago, there were way more challenges as far as social barriers, environmental barriers.
Oh, and people were more isolated for their differences also.
Yes. Yeah,
terrible.
We weren't talking about it as
right.
much. And I think that if someone should ask questions, or want to, if they're dealing with wanting to know more about your disability, or they mean to help. For example, if someone opens the door for me, if I'm shopping, some people might take offense to that. I don't take offense. If someone says, I have a scooter, by the way, a little power scooter that I use when we're traveling. And sometimes people might make a joke, oh, you're going so fast, you're going to get a speeding ticket. Some people might take offense to that. I don't take offense to that. I feel like those are opening the doors to communication, and I don't think that it's always inappropriate.
I agree. And some people take offense because of what's inside, not because of what you've said. But, how lucky for the world that you are such a totally comfortable human being. And I'm guessing that if that's contagious, that's one of your greatest gifts.
Yeah,
I'm just saying from what I'm listening to. That's
huge.
It
was a process, though. I have to say, it was a process. I mean, we're not born this way where we accept everything. We have to figure it all out.
That's true of everybody. Yeah.
And, interesting, I'd like to say, kick back to when I first started, and I put together the information for my first workshop back in 2004, I didn't realize till much later that all this information that I was writing and putting together was actually a manifesto for myself.
Oh,
and it was a very cathartic experience.
Yes.
And in the service of others, we help ourselves.
Yes, yes.
It was a really amazing thing, but I didn't see it that way.
So that comfort didn't come to you as a young child?
Well, I feel like I was raised by a wonderful family, no doubt about that. I think, though, that my family, not unlike any other family, were protective.
Sure.
And they wanted to make sure that I would be cared for in my adult years, not knowing how it was going to turn out. But I was raised with a lot of independence type of encouragement and such. But I just think that it's okay to say that we're imperfect. And our bodies are imperfect. And oftentimes when I talk in my seminars, I say, this is what I say, and I hope people would embrace it. I accept my body as imperfect. It gives me breath and gives me life. What matters most is how I carry myself, not how my body carries me.
Oh, lovely.
And I feel that gives me comfort. It gives a lot of people comfort. Sadly, there are people that don't feel comforted by that. And they feel that it could be shaming to say, oh, your body's imperfect. I don't find it shaming. I find that it's a reality. We're not perfect. None of us are, whether you see it and it's visible or not.
I was going to say, most people carry that all the time anyway. People are crazy with perfectionism.
You think?
Or demanding it of themselves. Yes,
yeah.
What about the plastic surgery industry?
That's true, too.
I mean, not to scorn anything at all, because what people want to do to make themselves feel better is fine. But still, That's not just limited to the, limitations that you see in people at all.
Yes,
this is wonderful.
And, while I value and appreciate athletes and people who are in the physical
culture world,
culture type of thing, these are all great because I think it's wonderful, but I think it's misleading to say, oh, they have perfect bodies. They may look good, but it doesn't mean they have a perfect... No one has a perfect body.
And it's kind of irrelevant to the deeper self.
Yes.
I have a question just on the... Because I am ultimately about love letters and
yes.
people's expressing. You know, you spend a lot of time in your life talking about how you express the feelings you have, the attractions and the sexuality and the whatever it is that you need. You're about expressing self here.
Yes.
If you were to write a love letter right now to somebody, who would it be to?
Mm.
I don't like to be the love letter police, but I'm listening to you, and I've already got four people who should get them, but go ahead.
I think that we should all write a love letter to ourselves, and I think we should have an affair with ourselves and with our life, and I don't mean it from an egocentric or arrogant manner. I think it's to say that it's okay to accept who you are and what you have and live life to the fullest.
And
give yourself permission.
I'm thinking of even something more specific. I love that you would write one to yourself. And I'm thinking that as a part of your resume almost, how nice to be able to find a letter from you to you in your handwriting somewhere in your belongings. Let somebody find it in 100 years and know what a treasure they've come upon.
Wow.
Because even you're saying that, you know, not just how you said it in more general terms, but, you know, I love the fact that I've got this gorgeous thick hair with a dip of a wave in the front and beautiful eyes and whatever it is.
So your question is, who would
Would you write one to yourself with the specifics about what you can really appreciate, not just in general about my body and it gives me life, but about specific things, how good I look in that tomato red. Specific things. I like that. Just a thought.
Yeah. I'm trying to see my analytical mind is going crazy now.
Okay, good. That's all I asked for. Perfect.
So,
there's a value for other people to see that you've written that. And not a bad exercise for others.
Yes. So, let's get back to your question now.
Go ahead.
Who would I write a letter to besides myself?
Uh-huh.
Okay, let me think.
Are your parents still here?
Yes. So, are you saying, like, someone in specific in my life?
Yes.
Well,
on a piece of paper, your handwriting in an envelope stamped and mailed to that cute man sitting right over there. Anybody.
I would say that probably I'm going to get emotional. I hate
good.
That.
I love it.
Oh, I would write a letter to my son.
Okay. We didn't talk about that, but that's almost enough to hear.
I'm a mom.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay, because we just met, so I don't know these things. How old is he?
Wonderful. He's 26. So I would write a letter to him that he could pass on to his kids.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. I didn't know you had children, but you know, those next generations.
Yeah.
It's like planting a tree under whose shade you know you will never sit because it will take so long to get big enough to give shade.
Yeah.
And what a legacy for grandchildren to have a letter in your handwriting.
Because I know that life and the world is changing so much, and people are thinking, oh my God, get me off this train. And my basic message is that no matter what's going on, there's a way to achieve happiness and fulfillment, no matter how much our life is changing around us. And we just get to the basic core of what's important.
Oh, that's just a wonderful note to end on. Will you come back and do another one with me?
Yeah.
If you have other things to talk about, which you certainly must.
Oh, I have so many things here. I've got a whole folder of information.
Well, will you come back and just maybe come on once in a while and just share some more?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm so
pleasure.
Happy to know about your son.
Thank
Where does
you.
He live?
He lives here near me.
Nice.
And
okay.
Yeah, I see him all the time. And you know how it is. It doesn't matter, no matter how old they are. They're still your kids.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right. When
great.
Things are good for them, they're good for you. And yes.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. Well, until next time, which I hope will be soon.
Yes.
This
thank
is
you.
Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And thank you so much again for all that you shared and for just being here with us. This is great. And just remember that when it comes to writing a letter, why not? If you have a positive thing to say to somebody, why not write it down, put it in the mail, stamp it and let somebody else's life, and it is absolutely it is a gift of enormous importance. And you know, people can't reread a phone call, and there are times in life when you look at an old letter and handwriting, you know, once people are gone, when grandchildren or children find a letter in your handwriting, it's like having you back.
It's wonderful. Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Okay. Thank you. And I can see you've got nice handwriting over on the little notes here. Well, thank you, dear. Until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye.
Thank you.